Welcome to the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast. I'm Brady, and I'm sharing my journey learning Bitcoin, hoping it makes yours a bit easier. And how's it going out there, all my Bitcoiners all around the world? Thanks for joining me again here for another day at the dawn of the Bitcoin Renaissance. Today, I have a great episode with Ali Hammam for you. He is the proprietor of Tahini's Restaurants in Ontario, Canada, and he is running his business on a Bitcoin standard. We'll get a great story about why he's doing that and how much he has come along in a short time down the rabbit hole to becoming a highly convicted Bitcoiner. But first, let's check in with Swan. Sign up for Swan's referral program. It is popping right now. We've got lots of Swan Force members. You can sign up at swanbitcoin.com/enlist. You'll get a custom landing page with your avatar and a message at the top. You'll earn 25% of Swan's fees on every purchase made by your referrals when they choose to stack with Swan. You'll earn that for 3 years. You can stack some meaningful sats. And of course, your referrals get $10 of Bitcoin. Everybody wins. And not only that, we are adding the ability for you to give away great Bitcoin education content as part of your efforts to earn referrals. So now, besides just the $10, you'll be able to give a free book. We're starting with Jan Pritzker's Inventing Bitcoin. Of course, Jan is a co-founder and CTO of Swan, and he's giving away his book for free to help spread Bitcoin education, to help create new hodlers. So your referrals will get $10 of Bitcoin and a free book. We're going to be adding that to your referral dashboard, that link, and we'll be emailing it out to all of the Swan Force members very soon. That's really cool. We're really excited about combining the giving away of Bitcoin education and some sats itself, 10 bucks of sats, and helping you earn more referrals so you can stack sats as well. It is a beautiful reinforcing circle of good outcomes for everyone. Super excited about it. Check out Swan Signal Live. Next week, we have Danielle DiMartino Booth. She's the author of Fed Up and a fantastic macro analyst, and Giga Chad himself, Michael Saylor, the CEO of MicroStrategy. He's going to be joining Danielle. We'll have Danielle and Michael talking about our macro situation, about trying to run a big corporation in America in this situation, about where we're headed. And we'll get then Michael for an extra half hour to nerd out on Bitcoin. It's going to be a fantastic episode. Go to youtube.com/swansignal to subscribe. Right now, turn on those notifications so you don't miss our live broadcasts. You can join us in the chats. We often, you know, talk about your hot takes in the chats. We talk about, we'll put up questions on the screen and have our guests answer them. You can also subscribe to the pod at swansignalpodcast.com. And thanks as always to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network. Check out their feed for other great Bitcoin podcasts. You can find them on Twitter at LTB Network. All right, let's dive into this one. Ali Hammam is a new Bitcoiner. He just fell down the rabbit hole in 2020. And he's running a chain of restaurants called Tahini's Restaurants in Ontario, Canada. He comes from Egypt and he's, you know, sharing Egyptian food through his restaurants with Canadians. And he's built this thing out from a single restaurant to franchising it now. They've got several restaurants and a couple franchises ready to come online. He's a very successful entrepreneur. He tells the story about how his parents worked hard to save up enough money to pass down to their children to help them, get out of Egypt and move to Canada. He talks about the capital controls in Egypt that made that hard and took away a massive percentage of Ali's parents' work and savings. They got to Canada and, you know, Ali, as an entrepreneur, started his business, became successful, and then he discovered Bitcoin as a way to store the value generated, the money, the profits generated by his business and not allow them to be subject to the inflation of fiat money printing. It's a fantastic story. I really think you all are going to enjoy it. Let's dive into this one.
You are doing an amazing job, by the way, with your podcast. I don't know how you manage all these podcasts together, but
thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, no, I get paid full time to do it now, so that makes it a lot easier. All right, man. We got some people trickling in now. This is the first live edition of the Citizen Bitcoin podcast. I've been going for 100. This is episode number 104. I've never done a video podcast on these interviews before. And this is the first live video for sure. So you can check out the YouTube channel. Of course, it's going live on my Twitter handle as well. So this is going to be fun. I'm sitting down here with Ali Hammam. He's of the Tahini's restaurant in Ontario. You Bitcoiners are going to be aware of him from his awesome threads on Twitter talking about taking his company onto a Bitcoin standard. He dropped a thread on Friday that was an absolutely incredible story of his background, his family's background, and I had to get him on the show to talk about this story and, you know, just his journey learning Bitcoin. Ali, welcome, man. How you doing?
Good, Brady. How are you? I'm honored to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for taking the time to join. I know you have a busy restaurant to run. So yeah, let's dive into this story that you laid out on Twitter. It is an amazing story, and it's one that I've heard several times from Bitcoiners who are coming from countries where inflation is a really devastating problem, being felt over much more compressed time periods than we might feel it here in the United States. So let's get into your story, man. Get as detailed as you want. I want to hear hear all about it.
Yeah. So. Like I said, in the thread, we, lived in Egypt before, 2011, and we were kind of like a floating family. So my father was, living and working in Saudi Arabia, and we were living in Egypt where I got my education, and, my brother, which is my partner, was, finished his education and kind of started working there. And we were kind of back and forth between countries. My father would come visit in the summers, and that's how we kind of lived for years. And then 2011 hit, and that's when the Arab Spring happened, and the Egyptian Revolution went down, and we were there. We got to be a part of it from day one in Alexandria and all the way to Tahrir Square in Cairo. It was just something spectacular to be a part of.
What was that scene like, man? Like, I mean, that must have been really intense.
It was crazy. Like, I couldn't even describe it that well, but the days of the protests, like, you go out in the street and you can see people as, like, you look to your right and you see people as far as your eye can see, and you look to the left and it's the same thing. And people just had it with the system and with the president at the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a revolution. It was beautiful. It was, we marched like across the whole city of Alexandria, and we got hit with tear gas. We got surrounded by riot police, and they tried to like trap us in and stuff like that. And me and my brother, like, we evaded them and stuff like that. But the will of the people was stronger, and the revolution, overthrew the president. And we thought it was the greatest year of Egypt's history.
Right. And
of course, it wasn't. That was just the hype of the moment. The next year, or even because that happened at the beginning of 2011. So the same year, we decided that we were going to move to Canada. And originally my father got his PhD from Canada here earlier in his life, and it was perfect timing. We wanted to start our careers here in Canada, and my parents wanted to retire.
Right.
So we said, this is it. This is perfect. So we all moved. And
but before this, like, I mean, your dad was working really hard to retire, right? And hadn't they made some investments? They'd been, I mean, was there like a, how were they saving money, I guess?
So my parents mainly saved their money in two vehicles, in real estate and in fiat.
Right.
And most of that was in Egypt. They saved all their savings in real estate and fiat, and then when it came time to retire, they wanted to move the wealth that they have accumulated over the years out of the country to here in Canada, but it wasn't as easy as they thought, right?
Yeah, sure.
The banks froze all money coming out of the country. You couldn't move anything. Like, you had, like, I think they gave you a limit of like $1,000 per month, something like that, something ridiculous, you know?
Right. So capital, like, really strict capital controls coming down from the Egyptian government. Yeah.
Yeah. From the banks mainly. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
So they were stuck. And which forced my father to continue working. He continued to work for 6 more years in Saudi to try to fund their new home that they got here in Canada. Yeah. And yeah, it kind of like ruined all of their plans of retirement. So then they just figured, you know what, we'll wait it out. You know, a revolution just happened. Things are messed up right now. So they waited it out.
Yeah.
And from 2012 to 2017, when things got a little bit easier to move money around, the Egyptian pound dropped 65% against the US dollar.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's devastating, man.
And every year it would just keep dropping more and more and more. And we'd just be sitting here like in shock. And they'd be talking, look how much, you know, a cup of coffee is. Look how much the sandwich is. Look how much this is, right? And over a course of 5 years, they saw the wealth that they had in fiat just like almost disappear. And that is an experience that I know for a fact that tons of people go through. And this is why we want to be public and we want to speak about this, is because you do have another option now.
Yeah.
And the other option that people have is Bitcoin. They just don't know it yet. They're afraid of it. They're too lazy to do the homework, right? So we view Bitcoin as the safe haven from that fiat system, right? And we're not saying, like, we're here in Canada, we're not saying that what happened in Egypt is going to happen in Canada, or that they're the same like country or anything, but eventually, we know how these systems turn out.
Right. Right. Inevitable conclusion, man.
Inevitable conclusion. It's going to come down to a point where this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Eventually. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I've seen it, right?
Right.
So.
Yeah, you've seen it in Egypt. I mean, that's a devastating blow to a family. And talk about, like, you know, Robert Breedlove likes to talk about time theft, right? He makes this, you know, describes inflation in this way that's visceral, I think. And in Masters and Slaves of Money, he like, you know, compares it to the devastating loss of time that was like stolen from slaves during the African slave trade. And if you look at the amount of time that's stolen through inflation, just since the founding of the Federal Reserve, it's even more staggering because it's on a global scale at this point. So then you take that time theft and you just compress it down to, you know, a very short period of time when there's, you know, fast inflation or even hyperinflation in certain countries. That's, I mean, you know, your parents are trying to like save for retirement. They've spent a lot of time trying to get to the point where they can have time to themselves and retire from work. And they're stolen from on both sides, right? Like, because now your dad had to work longer, right? Like, yeah. In order to reach retirement again. So did he come to Canada and start working again?
So he eventually, we forced him to retire. He's a warrior, man. My dad is like, he just wanted to keep going. He was 68 and we kind of forced him to like, just come on, just stop what you're doing. Come down. You're good. You're set. But he always had that feeling like, no, it's, you know, like I need to do one more year. Right. And it's kind of this, this mouse wheel, you know,
the hamster wheel thing.
Yes. The way the monetary system is built kind of forces everyone to want to stay on that hamster wheel forever.
Yeah.
Right? Because they have to, you know that it's never going to be enough. My money is going to be worth less in the future. So I'm just going to keep doing more and more and more and more, and it never ends.
Right.
Not including the debt side of things.
Right. Yeah. You're exactly right. And it's, you know, it also, like, you have to get on the hamster wheel, and it's doing something that you may not necessarily want to be spending your time doing, right? And if you can find a job that you love on that hamster wheel, while you're on the hamster wheel, it does help. It makes that time go by faster and feel like it's more justified. But that's not the case for a lot of people who are forced into, you know, jobs that will make them a certain amount of money, even though, like, pursuing their passion may, like, you know, take a few years where you're making barely anything, you know, and there's just not a reality for a lot of people. So you kind of compromise and you're like, okay, well, I'll do this thing. And then you may need to get a second job, you know?
Yeah.
Wages stagnant for a long time. Our productivity has kept increasing, but where does that like increased productivity go, right? All that those earnings go to inflation and then like to people who control the capital, who are close to the money printer. It's absolutely unfair, man. So your dad like is a survivor of this, and you watched all this go down, and now you're an entrepreneur yourself, right? So let's talk about like starting up your restaurant, like in the face of with this knowledge, right? When you guys got out of Egypt and just took a major haircut on your savings, what inspired you to go out on your own and start your own business? How did that come about?
So we started our restaurant in 2012. We bought an existing restaurant and we kind of rebranded it and did our own thing. And a couple years later, we opened up a second one, then a third, then we transitioned to a franchise model. Mm-hmm. And we opened up in the process of opening up the fourth right now. And then we have three franchise locations lined up to be open within the coming year. So,
oh, congratulations, man.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Super exciting.
All in Ontario, or are you going in different cities now?
All in Ontario for now.
Yeah.
We kind of want to get it right when we're, you know, restricted in Ontario, and then we're going to eventually expand to other provinces and other countries. So
right.
So yeah, so it was like an entrepreneur hustle since we came here till this day. And I never really paid attention to Bitcoin all those years. We're new to Bitcoin. Like, we're class of 2020, right?
Okay. Wow, man. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
We came into this and it became clear to us during the crisis of COVID, right?
Right.
And that crisis and everything that happened made things so much clearer for us.
Yeah.
Just the way things went down, and I wish I'd kind of figured all this out earlier, but I'm not complaining. I'm happy that, you know, we figured it out. We went down the rabbit hole, and it was a good result.
How'd you tip down the rabbit hole?
So it started with me out of my partners, and it started with my personal portfolio. I was pretty lucky to avoid the crash. I was mainly invested in stocks before, and when January came, I was like 75% cash and only 25% left in. And then March came, everything like dipped and crashed, so I just went all in and started buying everything. Right.
That's pretty baller. Like, you know, most people in that fear state are hard. It's hard to overcome. You know, it's like, okay, is it going to keep crashing? Like, what's going on here? Is it over? You know,
yeah. I got lucky, right? It could have kept crashing. I had no idea. Even when I sold like in January, I had no idea that there was a crash coming. It was.
Right. Well, and the fact that you're brand new, right? Like that's. Yeah. It makes it even more impressive to me because, you know, usually you have to develop some level of conviction to like be able to weather that kind of thing. That was a massive crash Black Thursday Bitcoiners.
I bought Bitcoin in March after the crash.
Okay. When it was low, that's when you went all in, right? Yeah. That's what I'm saying though.
So when I started buying stuff in the crash, I started buying mostly stocks.
I got you. Okay.
And then I bought a little Bitcoin, right? Okay. And I bought some. But then when I bought it, I started looking into it. Because that's what happens when you buy everything, right? Any stock, any company, like anything like that, you really dig into it after you buy it.
You got to get skin in the game.
Yeah.
Taleb says. Yeah.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And I got to give a shout out to Preston Pish because he was the one... where got me curious and got me buying that first time. But I had no like idea like of what I know now, right?
Yeah.
So after I bought it, I started digging into it and studying it. And then I stumbled upon the number zero in Bitcoin by Robert Breedlove.
Yeah. Amazing piece, right? Mind blowing,
right?
Yeah.
When I read that, it all clicked for me. I read it again and again. And then I just started going down the rabbit hole from that point on. Right. And the more I learned, the more I bought. And I was lucky enough that, you know, my stocks kept going up. So I kept selling them and then buying more Bitcoin and read the Bitcoin Standard, bought more Bitcoin. Read Jeff Booth, Price of Tomorrow, bought more, listened to you, listened to all the podcasts.
Yeah.
And I just kept accumulating more and more and more. And yeah, and then I came to the conclusion that Bitcoin is a true free savings technology that stores wealth across time and space.
Boom. You sound like Robert Breedlove. I can tell you've been reading his stuff. And Michael Saylor too, for that matter.
Yeah, that's true. And we, I said that with our first announcement. I'm like, and this is what we think Bitcoin is. We don't think it's just an investment. You know, it's a savings technology. It's
right.
It's a little bit different than that, right? It's a way where you can have a piggy bank that actually works.
Yeah. Right. Instead of, you know, a melting ice cube.
Yeah.
Sitting in. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So when When did you decide to move your restaurant and like your personal savings onto a Bitcoin standard? This is sort of the story of the year, I think, in Bitcoin is, you know, people have been talking about individuals kind of moving themselves to a Bitcoin standard, using Bitcoin as their unit of accounts, you know, being 99 or 100% or 100% plus in Bitcoin, meaning that you're living your life, your family is on a Bitcoin standard, right?
Yeah.
And now we've seen like, you know, several companies announce, you know, clearly that they're keeping all their savings, their corporate treasury is in Bitcoin. Snappa was one that came out, and then and your restaurants, your business. And then of course MicroStrategy just came in and was like, boom.
That's a big palm on
right?
Yeah.
When did you decide like, okay, I'm gonna go from this thing as an investment to a savings technology?
So as I was going down the rabbit hole, I started dragging my partners down with me, right?
Okay.
Because,
yeah.
They've listened to me in the past and previous investments, and it worked out. So they trust my judgment on it.
You had some cred.
And yeah, and so they started going down. Every time I'd read an article, read a book, watch a video, listen to a show, I'd send it to them.
Yeah.
And we talk about it. And they got dragged into their own little rabbit hole. They started buying it in their own personal portfolio. And exact same process that I went through. They just kept, bought a little, then kept, you know, kept learning, bought more. Then we're all Bitcoiners at this point, right?
Amazing, yeah.
And then,
so you guys are having like board meetings or whatever, like meetings talking about the business, and you're,
yeah,
you know, veering off into Bitcoin tangents and stuff.
Pretty much. Yeah, we'd be like, because March was tough. We had to lay off a lot of people, and we were like in the restaurants doing all the work, doing all hard work, dishwashing, yeah, everything, right? And while I was doing all that, I was like, I had my earplugs, and I was listening to books and podcasts and everything.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah, and so were they, right? So we ended up putting everything from our personal portfolios into Bitcoin until we ran out of money.
Wow.
And then we said, well, you know, the company has money now because business started booming again, and we started doing well. And that's when we got together, we had a few meetings, talk about it. And when we saw Michael Saylor do it,
yeah,
it was already there, that kind of pushed us over the edge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we just boom, went all in. We were like, this is a sign, this is going to be a race of accumulation now. Right.
And right, man.
And we really think this decade is going to be a race on who acquires more Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the land grab. This is the land rush that we're in right now.
Yeah.
The Bitcoin rush is happening.
There's only a fixed amount. So you're going to see like a short squeeze of, you know, hell. Like, you're not
epic proportions. Yeah. It's going to be epic.
Yeah. So we're excited about it. We hope more small businesses and medium-sized businesses adopt it.
Yeah.
Because we really think that, you know, big corporations are eventually going to get in as time goes by.
Yeah.
And the reality is that Bitcoin is the hardest and fairest money out there. But it's not going to care about your feelings, because
right,
it's the hardest, fairest money out there, right? So it will solve the fairness problem. But if you're the last one to buy it, it's not going to solve the inequality problem.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that phrase is kind of loaded, right? I mean, it implies that there's unfairness in the system, which I completely, you know, agree with on several different levels. And we can debate all of those inequalities that are sort of systemic, but the one that matters most, the root of all that systemic inequality is the control of the money, right? It's not the money is the root of all evil. It's that the centralized control of the money is the root of all evil. That's where it starts. Not talking about systemic evils, not like, individual evil or whatever. I don't know if I need to qualify that, but that's the beginning of the systemic inequality. So if you get rid of that, and you have money that doesn't have any pyramid to it, right? Like fiat's a pyramid scheme. It starts with the central banks get to hold the gold. That's the real money. And then they hypothecate it into paper and it goes to the big banks and the corporations. They get to lend it out at, higher interest rates, et cetera, all the way down to like the, payday loan sharks and credit card companies. Right. And there's this whole, pyramid of a cantillion effect. And you get rid of that. You just crush the pyramid. Now it's flat and everybody has equal access to a money with a, immutable monetary supply. So that is game changer. I agree with you completely. Yeah. But then you have it doesn't solve, humanity. It doesn't change the nature of humans. We're all going to have, there's going to be inequality. There's going to be people who, just for different reasons win. Whether it be through their abilities and effort or through some other like scammy way, you're not going to get rid of like human, ingenuity to scam the crap out of people, cool. So you guys moved to a Bitcoin standard, which means that you're saving like all, profits in Bitcoin. So you just convert it all to Bitcoin.
Yeah, so it doesn't mean like, because a lot of people, ever since we announced it, we get like a ton of messages like, do you guys take Bitcoin for payments? And do you guys, Lightning Network, all that? And that's not how we are doing it.
Yeah.
We will operate in fiat 100%, all the restaurants. Mm-hmm. We're going to do all of our purchases in fiat. And then all the savings that the company makes, that's what we convert into Bitcoin, right?
Sure.
It's really inefficient to try to apply the infrastructure to accept the, Lightning Network payments and all that. And when you do, like, how many of our customers are going to use it at the end of the day?
Right.
Right? So it's not worth it for us.
Yeah. So it's not a medium of exchange. It's not a payments technology yet.
Yeah.
Right.
I tell people this. I'm like, guys, do not spend your Bitcoin. Hoard it. Pay us in fiat. We're gonna buy Bitcoin with it. Just don't spend your Bitcoin. Save that. Right.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Right. It's your savings. It's every time you go buy a shawarma, you're gonna break your piggy bank to get a few dollars out of it, and then pay for a shawarma. It didn't make sense to be used that way for us.
Right. And like, okay, so this is completely foreign concept to, most of the world at this point. What is savings, right? Like, no, I don't even have I haven't had a savings account. I mean, when I first opened a bank account, when I was like a teenager, I had a savings account. You could actually make a couple percent or whatever on your savings at that point. I haven't had a savings account for 15 or 20 years, because why? Like, just do the free, the free checking account. There were like annual fees on savings accounts too, right? So like fiat is just like encouraging all of us to spend all the time. It's gotten rid of the store of value property completely. The central banks have rid it of that property. And most people on the planet live day to day. There is no savings. I think that even in the United States, the richest, one of the richest countries in the world, I think it was like 50% of Americans have less than $1,000 in savings. I mean, that's crazy. That's a massive, it might have been even more than that. It might have been even like 60, but it's an astonishing amount.
That's what the system does.
Exactly. It just takes and takes and takes, skims off the top constantly and encourages you to keep spending. And then you also build like this kind of culture of like, planned obsolescence, like you can't think long-term in this kind of environment. So even corporations, right? Like businesses, right? You have to start thinking about, making those quarterly earnings reports and like constantly bringing in revenue, et cetera, and growing at all costs, and can't really think about as much about the long-term future and accumulate capital over time in order to invest long-term. Now, corporations are doing that, obviously, but it's not incentivized really to the system is not, because it's based on this fiat money, right?
You want to be the hot stock in the market, don't have cash.
Yeah, right.
Loss for 3 years to grow your revenue, and that's how you become the hottest stock in the market, right?
Yeah, I mean, and then you can get to the point where you have the network effect is sealed up, and you can start accumulating cash like Apple and these big companies that are sitting on hoards. That's how you kind of protect your position. So yeah, but you're right. Like, you got to pursue that hardcore to earn that place, that very coveted place at the top, where you're like sort of able to hold cash as a moat. But like you've been talking about, right? Like, you've taken your business, instead of holding cash, you're holding Bitcoin. Saylor has talked about this very clearly, that he doesn't want to be sitting on this hoard of cash that's melting over time. And one of his quotes that, like, he's dropping these fire tweets like every day now, but the one the other day was like, Bitcoin's not for sending money to someone 10,000 miles away. It's for sending money to someone 10,000 days away, or 10,000 days away, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So yeah, like you said, cross space and time. Go for it, man.
Actually, like, I kind of want to send a message to some people out there that are watching your show. I want to send a message to communities, because that's where I think Bitcoin can benefit the most. There's a lot of communities out there, Brady, that are really hurting by this, right?
Yeah.
Specifically, I want to tell the Muslim community, because I'm part of the Muslim community here in Canada, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And just like every other community, they're faced with the same problems, right? So I don't know if you know this about the Muslim community, Brady, but we are kind of forbidden to use interest.
Yeah, yeah. It's right?
Part of the teachings of our religion is to not use interest. Right? So not to live in a debt economy, not to live in a debt world. Right. And so this put us in a very difficult spot, right? Because that's the whole world is based on right now. Okay.
Right.
So you have that principle, and then you have the situation that we're in, which is countries around the world are competing to print more money. Okay. And that's right. And you can read it all over, right?
Yep.
The inflation that we're facing, all right, is not 2%.
No.
Right? It's more in the realm of 10 to 20%. Okay? And I don't think people understand that, because what that means is that your retirement is running away at a 20% a year from you. So unless you're making 20% extra in income every year for the rest of your life, you won't be able to keep up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's half, it cuts in half in 5 years.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So that's the situation that we're in, okay?
Yeah.
So what are the options, right? What are the options facing, for example, the Muslim community? Option one is stick by your principles and don't borrow anything, save in cash, and be poor for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah.
That's option one. Option two is forget about your principles, right? Embrace the debt economy.
Right.
And spend your whole life on that hamster wheel trying to pay off your debts,
yep,
and then not having enough money to retire. So that's not a good option. Okay. Option three, figure out and be a stock market wizard and pick all the Apples and the Amazons and the Netflix right when they start and try to get it all right. Yeah. And then you'll have enough. Good luck with that.
Good luck. Right?
That's not gonna happen. Okay.
Yeah.
And just so you know, most people that I know in my community, they don't want to invest in the stock market because they don't want to put it, for example, in a mutual fund or an index fund, because they don't want to invest in like companies that are associated with war or alcohol or interest, right? Because against, you know, our culture.
Yeah.
So that's off the table. So that just gets, and then these are the options that are faced with, right?
Right.
And then you think, you know, there's almost 2 billion Muslims in the world right now. And they're all faced with these options because the whole world runs on a debt economy, even the Muslim countries, right? Sure.
You have to. Yeah.
You have to. That's just the way it is.
Just the way it is.
They don't realize that this is leading to them, you know, just getting wrecked, right?
Yeah, right.
Not having enough to retire, you know, living in anxiety for maybe the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the solution, right? I've painted a really bad picture. What's the solution? Solution is to go on a Bitcoin standard. Invest in Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is a true free savings technology that stores wealth across time and space. People, like, you get that, Brady, right?
Right.
But other people won't. So I'll just dissect that for a little bit, all right, if you don't mind.
Please do.
So, because this is deep, like, it, like, you know, I kind of shortened it down because everybody tries to come up with what Bitcoin is, they're, you know, one own one little sentence.
Yeah.
This is what I think personally is the best way to do it, for me at least. So Bitcoin is free, and the fact that you don't pay a subscription to use it, right? There's no, like, right? It's completely optional and voluntary, right? It's free to participate. It's your own free will to do that. You have to decide. Okay.
Yeah.
It's free in that sense. It's true in that anybody in the world can verify that I own my Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I can verify the entire Bitcoin network in Antarctica with a satellite dish. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Sitting in an igloo somewhere.
Yeah. Right?
So it's true in that sense. And then, so if you want to learn more about that, Dan Tapiero, you actually just did a show with him.
Yeah.
Did a show about Bitcoin being a truth machine, right?
Yeah. He
elaborates on that very, very well. You should definitely go listen to it. Okay, but it's true in that sense. Okay, it's a savings technology in that it's fixed and it's encrypted.
Yeah.
Right. So when you think of savings, right, and the idea of savings is really engraved in us since we're, you know, born and we earn our first pennies by a piggy bank. Right?
Right.
You take whatever money you get, you put it in the piggy bank, and that's how you save money. Right? But the problem is that the piggy banks of the world right now, the money that we all put our money in, the banks, actual banks, they don't operate like a piggy bank. They just don't.
No. No.
Right? Their piggy bank has a hole in the back, right?
Yeah.
And take your money, and they lend it out to A, B, C, D, and whoever.
Yeah, they just copy it. They make copies of it, basically. They're like, yeah, you get this.
Fractional Reserve Bank.
Right.
So they take your money, your hard-earned money, and they lend it out, and they make money off of it, and then they print money themselves.
Exactly.
And that's something that I learned from Saifedean recently, where banks essentially are printing money. And I tried to talk to this with someone recently, and the idea was so foreign to them. But like,
yeah,
think of it this way: when you take $1 million loan for your house, and then you pay that back with interest, you're paying an additional, say, $300,000 or $400,000 over 30 years. Okay, that $300,000 or $400,000 that you paid extra in interest, that is the printed money.
Yep.
Over 30 years, and that's being done to the scale of billions.
Yeah, right? Trillions. Trillions. Yeah.
Trillions. Sorry.
Yeah. Right?
So banks are printing money. So that kind of ruins the whole fixed, you know, idea of savings, right?
Yeah, it's being printed on several levels, including directly from retail banks.
Yeah,
like, who are giving out loans. Yeah, and that's the one that most people don't get, like you're saying. Like, that's kind of a hidden way that money is printed in the system.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Add to that, the normal way money gets printed by banks, right? Yeah. So that is diluting all the money in the world and is making your money worth less and less and less, okay? So Bitcoin is encrypted. And it saves your wealth and your money so that no one can mess with it.
Yeah.
That's one of the best things about Bitcoin, is that you know that your money is not going to be lent out or you know, or diluted or anything like that, because you can verify it, right?
It's true money. It's true money.
True, like,
it's the purest money, the purest form of money. It's perfect money.
Yeah, and that is the idea of the piggy bank, the original, the essential idea of how a piggy bank should work.
Yeah, true.
Bitcoin provides that, right?
Right.
So it's amazing, right? That we have that option and we're overlooking it till now, right? So that's savings technology, right? Across time, okay, when I say it stores wealth across time, it stores wealth across time because of the fixed quantity,
yep.
Because you know it's not going to get diluted, and the halving function, which happens in Bitcoin every 4 years, right? The halving function operates it cuts the supply of incoming Bitcoin by half every 4 years, and that leads to an exponential decay of the supply coming in for Bitcoin.
Yep.
Right? An exponential decay of the supply coming in of Bitcoin. I hope people really understand that, right?
Because yeah, and the thing that'll blow your mind is there's already 18.5 million outs of the 21 million, so there's only 2.5 million left to go.
Yeah.
Already.
So what when that happens, your purchasing power goes up.
Yeah.
It happens every 4 years, and the brilliance in Bitcoin is that it happens every 4 years because it gives a longer time horizon, you know, for the network to build up and for it to all play out. But cutting the supply in half increases your purchasing power, therefore acts as a true savings technology over time.
Yeah.
And like Michael Thiel said, the best thing about Bitcoin is that it you can send $100 million to somebody in 10,000 days, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, and that's the time thing of it, right?
Exactly.
And so how much is all of that worth to you? to have that, right? Across space, you're free to do whatever, like to move your money wherever you want.
Which I know you understood right away as soon as you...
That, yeah, exactly, right? And a lot of people will understand that intuitively because they've been through what we've been through. They saw what we saw, right?
Yeah.
They know that it's not that simple to move your money out of wherever country, right? A Middle Eastern country or an Asian company or wherever to anywhere you want. You think it's your money? It's not.
Yeah, it's not your money.
It's not your money. And even real estate, right? Real estate, you have to sell it, transfer it into money, and then send that money. Again.
Exactly. So you can't take your real estate with you, especially if there's capital controls, because you can't transmit it into money, transfer exactly. it into money, and then take right. it with you. Yeah.
So it, across space, because you can literally move it anywhere you want.
Yes.
And it's also literally stored in space, right? So Bitcoin is stored on the Bitcoin network, which is the strongest computer network in the world. And so even to people, like if somebody's new watching us, like when you store your Bitcoin, for example, on a hardware wallet, Bitcoins are not actually stored inside the wallet.
Right.
Stored on the network, which is so much more stronger than a little device, right? 100% never been hacked. For me personally, you keep hearing all those hacks in Bitcoin, and it kind of scares people off. But when you know that the network itself has never been hacked, never been compromised, never been anything, never been messed with, right? Yeah. That's something that you can trust to put your wealth in.
Yeah. And the security of the network is growing, you know, exponentially as well. So so one of the little metaphors that I've always liked is to kind of get at the idea of, you know, securing your money over time is that like your UTXO, your little, you know, piece of money that's on the blockchain, is every block that goes by is wrapped in amber, a layer of amber. And like, if you think about like Jurassic Park is a good example, but you can find it's tree sap basically, but over time you'll get this little jewel like from tree sap that's will trap like a mosquito from the dinosaur era or something like that. And it's like perfectly preserved, you know? And that's exactly how this works. Just like every block is like a layer and layer and layer of amber. And then you've got this little jewel, you know, like 50 years from now of this money that is exactly the way it was 50 years ago, you know?
I love that analogy. That's a great,
it's amazing. So yeah, I mean, across time and it's secure. So we're at like 150 or 140 exahashes per second on the network now, which is, you know, 15x where we were, you know, in like 2017, I think. And if corporations are putting and states, you know, eventually start putting their money into Bitcoin and using it as a reserve asset, as you know, you are being a leader on right now. Then of course they're going to have an interest in mining on the network too, to secure their money, to help secure their money. So then it's just feedback loop on all levels. It just gets more and more secure, more and more valuable, more and more secure.
100%. And so Brady, that's all of those reasons are, like the reasons why Bitcoin acts as an ark in a flood of money and liquidity, right?
Love it. Yeah.
That flood of money and liquidity is not, you're not gonna be happy that you know money's raining down. You might be happy at first, but eventually you're gonna drown.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because Bitcoin has all those properties, right? It acts as the best ark that you can build for yourself and your family to float on top of this liquidity, right? And also, because it has all those properties, it's pegging all central banks to the wall, every single one of them. You want to print $5, $6, $7 trillion? Sure, Bitcoin will probably go up to like 500, 600,000, right? You want to print more? Go for it. Want to print less? I don't care. Purchasing power is still going to go up. I don't care. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Worry about yourself, your business, your family, your health, right? Live your life free of all that worry. And you can do that by going on a Bitcoin standard.
Boom.
Buying Bitcoin.
Boom, man. That's awesome. You started getting into like ways that Bitcoin changes you individually, right? Like allows you to pay attention. Like, okay, let's take a quick example of that you were alluding to earlier, right? That you, the third option was that you have to become, you know, like a badass stock trader, right? If you wanted to get through this fiat world that we're living in. Well, my stepdad did that. He was a nephrologist, you know, kidney doctor, and spent hours every night, like Wall Street Journal open, like, you know, basically being his own wealth manager because he didn't really trust someone else to do it because they were just going to park it in some index fund. He wanted to beat inflation and beat those funds and stuff. And so he became a part-time stockbroker, right? Like, so he's spending, like, that was all of his time. Like, I hardly ever saw him. And that's a great example, right? Like, you don't have to spend your time doing that stuff. You get to store your value, you could build it up over time. You can, you know, maybe spend 5, 10, 15 years working your butt off and, like, you know, as hard as you can. And then you have the wealth saved up. Your career span could be way shorter. The amount of time that you have to work each day, far shorter. And you get to work on things that you're interested in because if you have all that spare time. So you get to sit down and think, what do I really want to do with my time?
Exactly.
And like, you know, so how, like, you've been studying this stuff. And first of all, I'm like super excited that you were able to come up to speed so quickly. I mean, you get it, man, you get it. And you just started buying what, 6 months ago, something like that. But yeah. This is, I keep seeing this, and it's the most bullish thing that I've seen all year long with all of this news that we've had, the macroeconomic backdrop that we're in, you know, MicroStrategy, PTJ, et cetera. I keep seeing Bitcoiners coming in 2020 and just like light speed compared to the way it used to be. We used to have to like just to figure out what was going on here. And that is amazing. That is so bullish. So I'm really happy to see that. But like, what have you been realizing on the individual level, like the personal level, how Bitcoin like might change the way you view your own life and like your family's life and stuff? Like, what effects do you think it might have in the future? You know, like as we move more and more steadily away from fiat and into like a Bitcoin world, how do you see things changing?
So I, before Bitcoin, I was, you mentioned that story about your father, Brady. I was in that. I was my own financial advisor, my own stock picker, my own everything. And it did consume me.
Yeah.
And like, it was not, I didn't mind it. Like, I still don't mind it because it kind of led me to Bitcoin. So,
sure.
You know, I would always tell people, you know, no matter what, keep learning, right? That's always good for you. But since I've gotten into Bitcoin, a lot has changed for me personally. So first of all, the work that I do, like I come into work every day with like, you know, like tap dancing, right?
Yeah.
Because I know that the value that I'm going to make, right, the work that I'm going to do today,
yeah,
is going to store across time and space.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yes, so, man.
I'm more motivated, more driven than I ever was. Right?
Love it.
You know, because like that's one of the core principles of it is honest pay for honest work, right? So I love that way that Bitcoin changed me. I make better shawarmas now. I'm more focused at work. So yeah, I love that. And for some reason, I'm eating better. working out more. I'm doing all this stuff because I'm not worried about all the bad stuff that might happen, could happen, whatever, right? Doesn't matter. So yeah, Bitcoin's changed me a lot, man.
It's so crazy, right? It happens to just about everyone I talk to about Bitcoin. I mean, so what do you attribute it to? Like, what's, if we could boil it down, like ask ourselves like five times, why does this happen? Why? Like, what's the base of this change, do you think? I mean, is it just like confidence?
So Brady, like, think of it this way. If you have $100 in your pocket and that's all you're going to have, and I come and steal a penny from you every day, right? For the coming whatever years, you're going to start feeling depressed.
Yeah, man.
That's what it boils down to. Like, I feel I'm not being stolen from anymore.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. And then multiply that by literally billions of individuals, right? And like just kind of a feeling of malaise, like you're stuck. You're on a hamster wheel. You can't move forward anywhere. It's depressing, man. It's just, man.
100%.
Man.
But, you know, like, it's a good time to be alive right now. And, you know, we can look at this as an opportunity to talk to more people about it, tell more people about it, you know. You know, that's why I love... you know, when I get invites, you know, like from you, I was super excited because, you know, I thought of it, okay, this is a chance that I could maybe, you know, help more people, open some eyes, you know, maybe I can explain it with a way that they can relate to it, because I'm not like, you know, I'm a guy, you know, I own a restaurant chain.
Yeah. You know,
I'm not like in this digital space. So yeah, I get super excited about these because hopefully people can listen. And it does solve a big problem, the biggest, in my opinion. So,
absolutely, man, the biggest problem. I hope you can share it with your community too, man, because they're going to want to listen to you, you know?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying, but...
Yeah, well, you can send them this and be like, hey, here are my thoughts.
Right now, people think we're crazy, right? They think we're like, oh, like you're trying to be like, you know, a little gambling or something, like, you know, it's too dangerous, too speculative, they don't get it, right? And you know probably what I'm talking about. You've probably dealt with this way longer than what I've been. But you talk to these subjects to people and it falls on deaf ears. Nobody likes to hear that they're, you know, they're getting stolen from or they're getting... screwed by the money.
Yeah.
And yeah, you do what you do, you know?
Yeah. I think people are waking up more and more to just the general idea that the institutions that we have been trusting are not to be trusted. Right. And it has been that way all along. There's this book called The Fourth Turning by Neil Howe. And I've listened to it and I've been talking with Brandon Quidham about it quite a bit. He's very inspired by the ideas in the book, and he's been writing a piece about about those ideas and how they apply to Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But the main idea is that we kind of live in this like these phases, like human society sort of moves in phases. And they've been roughly about 80 years through the American era, through this country. Like if you just think of kind of domestically what's happened in the country or, you know, internationally too, but just in terms of American history. And we're coming to the end of this kind of 80-year cycle. We're entering the fourth phase, the fourth turning of this 80-year cycle right now. And the way it works is in this last phase, you tear down institutions. So you go through this 80-year cycle of like building up institutions, becoming less trustful of them over time, and then tearing them down and then building them back up again. And you know, it's been about 80 years since gold was confiscated, a little over 100, you know, and this is all rough terms, not obviously exactly 80 years, but about 100 since the Federal Reserve was created. And so we are seeing like the challenges against these institutions that we have, you know, been living under for about 100 years right now, and tearing them down. And we have, I think, just this general sense that this is something's wrong, right? And so I think that that's helping sort of wake people up. They're being more amenable to these conversations, I feel. Like it is weird to go to somebody and be like, hey, you know, your money is completely broken. The base of your society is completely broken. You're like, what? That's some like crazy conspiracy theory or just something you don't want to believe. But I think just the message in general of like things are broken is definitely being more widely received in this era. Especially this year has been nuts, man.
And it's going to lead to like more and more people falling faster and harder, just like we did, because of how messed up everything is, right?
Yeah.
And so actually Jeff Booth keeps ringing the bell on this a lot.
Yeah.
He says technology is deflationary, period. Okay?
Yep.
And if you just play that out with what central banks are doing around the world, it's going to lead to more and more people losing trust in fiat currencies.
Yeah. Yep.
Because essentially that's what happens. It's the loss of that trust. Okay. So yeah, people will just fall faster and harder as this plays out, and they eventually start seeing the truth.
Yeah.
And
it's becoming more and more obvious. And you know, like you said, like as the inflation, the real inflation rate is somewhere between 10% and 20%.
Yeah.
And asset inflation is closer to 20% on that end. You know, the CPI that gets the consumer price index, that consumer price inflation that gets cited all the time, is just, you know, rigged and has been for a very long time. And that's what the Fed is using to target, you know, their money printing. So the fact that real inflation will catch up with, you know, with this printing over, you know, it takes a little while for the inflation to really kind of catch up with the monetary actions that are taken by the Fed. But when it does, it's going to be, to a degree that we haven't seen in 50 plus years. And so that will start really waking people up, and they'll become, like you said, more amenable to these messages. And the cool thing is this time, you know, like when it happened in the 70s, there was, you know, hyperinflation, and Paul Volcker came in and as the Fed chair and was like kind of stamped it out. He was sort of like the opposite of what, you know, Jerome Powell is doing now, which is trying to create inflation. You know, that era did not have Bitcoin, right? There was gold, but gold had been co-opted.
Michael Saylor, like, people that are in gold and Bitcoin, I always, you know, see that they have the exact same ideas. They're like, you know, everything they say matches up except for the solution for the problem.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So to anybody that's listening, that's a gold bug. We hear you, man. Like your concerns are, you know, our concerns. But go listen to Michael Saylor talk about gold. And he makes a pretty damn good argument that gold is, you know, it's going to continue to, you know, increase supply at 2% a year, right? Because it doesn't have that halving function and that absolute scarcity. It's an old technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me. Right, still going to be valuable. It's not going to go to zero or anything, right?
People
want gold.
You don't want it for jewelry and technology, but
yeah. But if you want money, you know, if you're buying gold for money, think about these two things and go listen to Michael Saylor talk about it.
Hear that, man?
Yeah.
I think we'll wrap things up here, but like I would love to hear you know, any last words that you have for the listeners and for Maybe just even some suggestions, your take on what helped you the most when you were falling down the rabbit hole, maybe like a book or a particular author. I mean, I know you've already cited this, but if you give us like, you know, the podcast, the book, and the author that you recommend to somebody, a friend of yours who came up and like, oh, you know about Bitcoin. Can, you know, where should I start?
Yeah. So the books, I definitely recommend that you go read The Bitcoin Standard by Saifedean Ammous, to understand the value of money, right? You need that to understand the value of money. What is money, right? So that book will help. You need to understand, read The Internet of Money by Antonov to understand the technology behind it.
Yes.
Right? You got to understand what it is. Right? So that book will definitely help. You need to read The Price of Tomorrow by Jeff Booth to see where the world is going, see where, what the future is. Right? So you need to understand these three things. I think these three books work great because they come at it from different angles, and when you put them all together, you kind of have like this super enlightenment, you know, thing going on.
I love it, man. Those are three great books, and not a combination that I heard put together before. But I agree completely, and yeah. I could see how those three would like work really well together.
And you know, listen to Brady in all of his podcasts. He does an amazing job. Listen to all the podcasters, man. Like the community here, like in Bitcoin, is amazing. A lot of people do a lot of work to get people educated, including yourself, Stefan Levera, Peter McCormack, Palm, every Preston Pish, Raul. Yep. And then, yeah, like these guys, just go down the rabbit hole. You know, just ask yourself, what is money? And keep trying to find that answer, right? And yeah.
Thanks, man. Thanks, Ali. This has been a ton of fun. It was good to meet you. And, you know, we definitely got to stay in touch. And I hope some good day we can share a shawarma and talk some Bitcoin in real life.
And if anybody wants to open a successful restaurant, a profitable business, shoot us a message at on our Twitter or anywhere, really. And we'll make sure to get back to you.
All right, man. Thanks so much for your time, Ali. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Brady.
Thank you so much to Ali for joining me. It was a really fun time to talk to him, to get to know brand new Bitcoiner who has developed the conviction to build his business on a Bitcoin standard. We are seeing this happening. All right, the day that I am recording this outro, Square, Jack Dorsey's company, Square, the massive global payments company, has decided to buy some Bitcoin and put it on their balance sheet. They bought over 4,000 Bitcoins, $50 million worth, and put it on their balance sheet. This is bullish, of course, on top of the news of MicroStrategy putting their entire company on a Bitcoin standard, just like Tahini's. This is awesome, all right? Thank you to Ali for joining me. You can find him on Twitter at TheRealTahinis, T-H-E-R-E-A-L-T-H-A... Shit, no, it's T-A... H-I-N-I-S, yes, The Real Tahinis. And I am Citizen Bitcoin on Twitter. The podcast website is citizenbitcoin.world. Share the podcast with your family and friends. Pick out a couple episodes that you think they'll really enjoy. Robert Breedlove's episode called Time, Money, and Bitcoin from First Principles is a great one to share with family and friends. Gigi's 21 Lessons is another great episode. Dig back in the archive, find those, send those links out to your family and friends, and get them stacking on Swan. And before you do, sign up for the Swan Force so you can stack some sats with every purchase that they make moving forward. 25% of our fees for 3 years. You can stack meaningful sats that way. Every sat counts. Every sat is going to be important in the future, all right? They're going to be worth a lot more than they are today. So stack your sats, refer your friends and family, get them on board. We'll be your Bitcoin wingman on this journey, all right? Check out Swan Signal Live, swansignalpodcast.com. Amazing guests, amazing conversations. Just had Robert Breedlove and Parker Lewis on for a Bitcoin Philosophers show. We've got Danielle DiMartino Booth and Michael Saylor next week. Then we've got Jeff Deist, the president of the Mises Institute, with Stefan Levera. It's going to be an Austrian economics education. SwanSignalPodcast.com, YouTube.com/SwanSignal. If you have any questions for me, please feel free to reach out. My DMs are open on Twitter. I'm at Citizen Bitcoin on Telegram. All right, that's it for this week. Take care out there, Bitcoiners, wherever you happen to be in the world.